Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon, and can I thank you for attending our press conference on our report, Alcohol in Our Lives. This is Val Sim, who is the other commissioner who worked with me on this project. But I want to make it clear that all the commissioners of the Law Commission shared in this, contributed to it, and agree with it. This is not just me. This is John Burrows QC, George Tanner QC, Dr. Warren Young, Val Sim, and myself. And so the fact is that a thing like the Law Commission is a bit like a Royal Commission in continuous session. And we've spent getting on for 2 years on this now, and we've collected a lot of evidence. We've had a lot of help. 14 government departments formed an interdepartmental committee and fed into this. But this is our report. It speaks for itself. We are not going to go around advocating it. We'll answer questions about it, and we will explain it for a couple of weeks, and then we will become silent and move on to many other things that we have to do. It's got 1,320 footnotes. That should indicate to you that it's research-driven. We were asked to produce evidence, and this whole report at 514 pages is lengthy. But the reason it is lengthy is because our terms of reference were exceedingly broad. We were asked to report into a lot of things, much more than previous inquiries had been asked to report on. And so that's the explanation. In the view of the Law Commission, New Zealand has much to gain and little to lose from this wide-ranging package that we are recommending to the government and to the Parliament today. The report is due to be tabled at noon. It contains 153 recommendations. It provides a blueprint for reducing both the short and long-term effects of alcohol misuse on our society. Those who enjoy alcohol socially and drink in a low-risk manner will be little affected by these recommendations. These reforms are firmly targeted at reducing harms associated with heavy drinking and drinking to intoxication. That, unfortunately, is the nature of the New Zealand drinking culture. Heavy drinking and drinking to intoxication. Now, in order to accomplish the goals, we need to ensure that alcohol is promoted, sold and supplied in a manner that better reflects the risks and the responsibilities associated with its consumption. And indeed, recognising the importance of alcohol as a driver of crime, the Minister of Justice, Simon Power, expedited our review. He asked us to report a year earlier than it was originally laid down on our terms of reference, and we have done this. We undertook a 3-month consultation. We published a paper before that, the issues paper, Alcohol in Our Lives. We consulted on that. We received 2,939 submissions, which is a record for the Law Commission, and indeed the report is the biggest we've ever produced as well. The size of the final report and the number of recommendations reflects the very broad-ranging terms of reference. We were asked to look not only at the licensing system, but a range of issues including pricing, promotions, parental responsibilities, advertising, and the adverse effects of alcohol on health and crime. That is a very broad brief. Now, the key policy recommendations that we are making include the introduction of a new comprehensive Alcohol Harm Reduction Act. We also recommend raising the price of alcohol by an average of 10% through the excise tax increases. We recommend regulating irresponsible promotions that encourage excessive consumption or purchase of alcohol. We recommend returning the minimum purchase age for alcohol to 20. The evidence on this is powerful. We recommend strengthening the rights and responsibilities of parents for the supply of alcohol to minors. That's people under 18. We recommend introducing national maximum closing hours for both on and off licences from 4 a.m. Where on licences will have to close with a 2 o'clock one door policy from 2 o'clock, and for off licences closing at 10. We recommend also increasing the ability of local people to influence how and where alcohol is sold in their communities. This is a very important matter about which we heard a lot in the submissions. There are 10 chapters in this report on the details of the licensing system. We recommend as well increasing personal responsibility for unacceptable or harmful behaviours induced by alcohol. This includes a civil cost recovery regime for those picked up by the police when grossly intoxicated, for about 21,000 of those every year. We also recommend moving over time, a 5-year period, to regulate alcohol advertising and sponsorship. Now, as the minister who oversaw the introduction of the Sale of Liquor Act in 1989, I remain of the view that there have been many benefits associated with the liberalisation of New Zealand's liquor laws. But having studied the research now for close on 2 years, I am in agreement with members of the New Zealand public who have told the Law Commission that they believe the pendulum has swung too far. A saturated alcohol market has led to intense competition and indeed the over-commercialisation of alcohol. A can of beer or an RTD can be bought for $1 or $2 in many retail outlets. This is less than we pay for bottled water. One of the consequences of alcohol being promoted and sold at pocket money prices is that we risk losing sight of its status as a legal drug capable of causing serious harm to others. More significantly, there is growing research evidence of a causal link between alcohol intoxication and aggression. The police are in no doubt that one of the key drivers behind the escalating levels of violent crime in this country is the abuse of alcohol. Unlike some other factors driving crime, alcohol abuse is a modifiable risk factor if we have the will to confront it. While many New Zealanders drink in a low-risk manner and reap the benefits of that, the uncomfortable truth is that a very significant minority, as many as 25% of all drinkers, drink heavily when they drink. And a much larger number engage in a persistent pattern of episodic drinking, the worst pattern of drinking for one's own health and inflicting damage on others. The Ministry of Health's latest alcohol use survey revealed 6 in 10 past year drinkers had become intoxicated at least once in that year. This equates with 1.3 million people, or half the adult population. 1 in 3, or 33% of men aged 18 to 24, reported drinking enough to feel drunk at least weekly. And among all drinkers, 1 in 10, the equivalent of 224,600 people, reported drinking enough to become intoxicated at least once a week. 1 in 5 past year drinkers also reported driving while feeling under the influence of alcohol in the past year. That equates with more than 444,000 adults. 1 in 6 adults had experienced harm from someone else's drinking in the past year, and that equates to 500,000 New Zealanders. What these figures make clear is that drinking to intoxication and drinking large quantities remain dominant features of our drinking culture, and that this behaviour is not confined to an aberrant minority. Now, while the law cannot directly control how people drink, it can ensure that the law governing alcohol is promoted, sold and supplied, and better recognises the risks associated with alcohol and discourages its abuse. The international evidence is clear that the most effective policies to reduce alcohol-related harm are those which target the availability, the price, and promotion of alcohol. Policies which target cheap alcohol are particularly important because the research shows that low-cost alcohol is favoured by young and heavy drinkers. A recommended 50% increase in excise tax would push alcohol prices up by an average of 10% and would differentially target low-cost alcohol, which is known to drive the most acute harm. Expert evidence that the Law Commission has obtained from Australian economic consultants Marsden Jacob and Associates suggests that an average 10% increase in the price of alcohol will result in net benefits to the New Zealand economy from reductions of alcohol-related harm. And that report, lengthy as it is an appendix to our report and is published. We are unapologetic about the fact that some policies in this package specifically target young people and their parents. We were required to adopt an evidential approach to this review, and the evidence, while unpopular, is clear. Alcohol presents a particular risk to our young people, both in the short and the long term, and too many of our young people are drinking in a high-risk manner and causing and experiencing high levels of harm as a result. The New Zealand police statistics show that young people aged 17 to 19 comprise the highest proportion of offenders who have consumed alcohol prior to committing an offence. We have found overwhelming support from the submitters, and those are just some of the submissions that we have received. We don't have room for all of them. We have found overwhelming support from them for a return to 20 as the minimum purchase age. In the last decade since the decision was made to lower the purchase age, the scientific understanding of the developing brain has advanced considerably. With that knowledge has come increased understanding of the risks that early onset of drinking poses to the adolescent, both in terms of acute harms and the longer term risk of dependency. We would be negligent if we disregarded that evidence in respect to alcohol legislation. Now, parents have a vital role to play in managing how their children are introduced to alcohol. The Commission is recommending in this connection that New Zealand follows the lead of several Australian states, Tasmania, Queensland and New South Wales, by introducing new legal provisions restricting who can supply alcohol to minors and under what conditions. Now, I want to emphasise the need for Parliament to treat the Commission's recommendations as an integrated package, rather than cherry-picking the more politically palatable elements. There's little point, for example, in raising the minimum purchase age, but doing nothing to stop selling alcohol to young people as the key to social and sexual success. Similarly, there is, in our view, little to be gained from tighter controls on pubs and bars if retailers continue to be allowed to promote heavily discounted alcohol for home consumption. All New Zealanders were impacted to some degree by the harmful use of alcohol, and all have an interest in addressing the problem. Every New Zealander has a social and economic interest in ensuring that future generations are not born impaired by their exposure to alcohol in the womb. We all have an interest in ensuring that our young people do not fail to reach their potential as a result of early exposure to alcohol. And we all have an interest in ensuring that the taxes we direct to hospitals, police cells and prisons are not squandered on preventable alcohol-related cases. Now, we know, and we have learnt this lesson well, that the subject of this report is a social battleground, replete with both passions and prejudices. We have tried to steer a reasonable course around these policy whirlpools and fashion a report that will address the needs of society as a whole. And I want, in conclusion, before I answer your questions, to thank the 14 government departments who were involved in the interdepartmental committee that fed in material and helped us. I want to thank all the law commissioners for their assistance, and a lot of them worked very hard on this. I want to thank all the people on our staff and the seconded staff, Kate Brett, Lucretia Seals, Marion Clifford, Rachel Haywood, Ryan Malone, Susan Joy, Helen Fielding, Fiona Sterling, Susan Roberts, all of whom contributed mightily to what has been a very demanding project for the Law Commission. Thank you.
So, Geoffrey, you could be forgiven for thinking that we do live in an alcohol-sodden society, listening to what you've said. But how do we compare with other countries, other like countries?
Well, we compare in this way. We're in about the same position as Australia. I think the United Kingdom is slightly worse. Canada and the US are better.
How would you describe our drinking culture?
Well, our drinking culture is bad because of the binge drinking element to it. It's not the total quantity of alcohol that is consumed. It is the problem of how we drink, as they say in the ALAC ad. It's the fact that people drink to get drunk, and then they become a problem. We are not saying that alcohol is put off limits. It is part of our society. That is not going to change. And we are not wanting to be advocating extreme measures. But this has become over-commercialised.
You mentioned that there was powerful evidence of returning the minimum purchase age to 20. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I can. I'll read you part of the report on that. There are two paragraphs, 16, 14 and 15, which are highly relevant. It seems clear that along with other policy and societal changes, reducing the minimum age for purchasing alcohol from 20 to 18 in 1999 contributed to the increased alcohol-related harm for young people. There was a significant increase in hospital presentations of intoxicated people under 20 in the year following the law change. There have been increases in the trends for the rates of prosecution for excess breath alcohol, road traffic crashes involving alcohol, fatal road traffic crashes involving alcohol among several youth cohorts in the years after 1999. The increase in alcohol-related crashes among 15 to 19-year-olds was higher relative to older age groups in the 4 years following the law change, and the higher rate of increase in road traffic crashes among the younger group has continued since, Similarly, as shown in Chapter 3, hospital admissions that are wholly attributable to alcohol peak dramatically between the ages of 15 and 29. Now, that is, I think, very important evidence. There are, I think, very important reasons for regarding the question of increasing the age as, in policy terms, slam dunk. It's self-evident.
Would that be the number one priority?
No. So
I know you don't want to cherry pick, but
I don't think it would be the number one priority, because I think you have to understand that no one measure in this sort of policy works. It's a combination of things in many different areas. That is why there are 153 recommendations here.
So why have we come to this drink get drunk culture? Is it a hangover from the old days of the 6 o'clock swill or what?
I think there is something in that, Mr. Soper. I think that we've never had a very healthy drinking culture in New Zealand, and I think the hope was that the 1989 Act and the successive amendments would produce this sort of sophisticated approach that actually we thought existed in Europe, but on further examination doesn't seem to exist there anymore either.
So did they simply get it wrong when they changed the law in 1989?
I think the age was incorrect, yes.
In your interim report, you recommended a split purchasing age.
We did.
You've changed that to
a... We have. We changed the split for this reason. First of all, it attracted very little support among our submissions. Secondly, we felt that the police submission on this was very powerful. I recommend you should read it. The police say 20, no exceptions. Policing exceptions is impossible.
What were some of the other recommendations that the Law Commission has rejected?
Well, I mean, it's just about impossible to catalogue them because of the number of submissions we have. The remarkable thing about it is so many people in New Zealand have so many opinions on this subject. It is remarkable how many opinions they have. We had 50 public meetings all around New Zealand, and I was just astonished at the level of public interest in it. I mean, we have never in the Law Commission engaged in a project that attracted as much widespread interest as this one. And we do quite a lot of important work here, but none that touches people in the way that this does. So, I mean, this report analyses all of the worthwhile options at considerable length, cites all the literature, and gives the reasons for what we recommend. I mean, it is up to the public and to the Parliament to make the judgment about what they accept. We were here to do an evidence-based study about what the evidence shows, and we have reported to the best of our ability on that, and we've written it in language that we hope everyone can understand. And we do hope that people will read it.
You're not suggesting that the government needs to adopt all 153 recommendations or it will fail?
I'm not suggesting anything in relation to the government. I've been the Minister of Justice. I know the difficulties of that position. I have no doubt that the Minister will apply himself diligently to this report.
So, Geoffrey, with the proposal to control the supply of liquor from parents to minors, how will that be enforced? Who will enforce that?
The police will enforce it, and indeed the parents themselves. The recommendation that we've got on that is really pretty interesting, and I'll read it to you in full, if I can find it. We went for quite a lot of discussion in Australia about that with the three people in Australia, the three states in Australia who've done this. I wonder if you could just find the recommendation and I'll read it out to them. It's in the chapter on age.
Wouldn't it be... Isn't this sort of going to end up with police poking around in the private lives of ordinary New Zealand families?
No, not at all. What we have suggested here is that no one should be able to supply alcohol to a minor except the parent or someone authorised by the parent. And that is a clear principle. Many of the submissions said to us, we're having trouble dealing with our children. They will want alcohol because their peers have got it, so we give in. why don't you put something in the law that we can point to that says we are in control of this? And that is quite an important... Thank you, Bill. Let me just read the... We want to introduce an offence for any person to supply alcohol to a minor under the age of 18 unless that person is the minor's parent or guardian or a responsible adult authorised by the parent or guardian and unless the alcohol is supplied in a responsible manner. This means that any person legally entitled to supply a minor who then fails to supply in a responsible manner, including providing appropriate supervision, commits an offence. Now, one feature of our law on this matter is that it becomes clear in a very long chapter that we've written on enforcement that the existing law has not been adequately enforced. And the failure to enforce it adequately is one of the most serious problems liquor law faces.
That is the case now, that if you supply liquor to an under 18-year-old, then there is a law in the statute books.
Yes, if you do it in a bar, it is, but not if you do it outside.
So you can supply liquor from an off licence to an underage drinker under the current law?
No, what we're saying is that no one can supply liquor to someone who is a minor except that minor's parent or someone authorised by the parent.
Isn't that the case now, though?
No, it's not.
Shortly after the Oshu paper was released, there was a bunch of parties in Auckland where parents were organising large parties for children who are under the age of 18. Would they be legal or illegal?
Under our proposals, they would require a special licence to do that now.
And would they still be able to do it?
The problem is that they would have to have parental consent. If they got that, they could do it.
I think at present they actually need parental consent anyway.
Yes, but the law on that is quite, I think it's section 118 and it's pretty uncertain. It depends on what a, quote, private gathering is.
Do you have a view about whether these very large drinking after-ball parties are desirable?
I have a view that the problem we have is that the earlier that people are introduced to alcohol, and it now seems to be 14 is quite common, the worse the prospects for that person having problems later on are. And it's really important, given the development of people's brains, which go on developing until they're 25, not to get into alcohol problems early. And the evidence, the international evidence on that, is just overwhelming.
Can you just clarify what the law is now and what it will be changing to in that regard?
Look, the licensing legislation in the Sale of Liquor Act in relation to private functions is very complicated. I'm not going to give a disposition on it here.
Could you tell us, under your proposals, would somebody who's now 20 be able to supply alcohol to 18 and 19-year-olds? And if so, how does that help?
There's no doubt that the people between 18 and 20 are not affected by the suggestion we're making about parental supply because they don't require a guardian at the age of 18.
What are your recommendations for Māori, given the new report that they suffer disproportionately in other New Zealanders?
We do think Māori suffer disproportionately compared with other New Zealanders. There's a very dangerous trend emerging. Māori did not drink as much as Pākehā historically. The latest figures suggest that they are drinking just as much, and that is not good news. And we are very worried about the binge drinking aspects which lead to problems. We have had a large hui with Māori to investigate all this that Te Puni Kokiri conducted for us or organised for us. And we were very sobered, if I may use that term, by its findings.
So, Geoffrey, what's the reasoning behind the $500 fine that police will be able to issue for drunk and disorderly behaviour? Couldn't this just end up in a whole set of disputes?
It's not a fine, it's a civil matter. It's a debt. And the rest of the debts, the matter will be resolved by the disputes tribunal. It's a much simpler thing than dragging someone through the courts on a criminal proceeding. That is why we have recommended it. The submissions that we got were extremely clear that what was needed here were elements of personal responsibility in the law. There are two very big changes in personal responsibility in this report compared with the existing law. One is the element of parental responsibility, and the second is the question of paying a penalty if the police are put to the expense of driving you home or putting you in the cells.
If the government did agree to put the drinking age up to 20, how would that transition be managed? Because you might have 18 or 19-year-olds accustomed to drinking and then the law changes.
The law has to be designed, and it has to go to the Parliament, and it has to have an interval before you implement it. We haven't got a bill here, so you're looking 18 months or more ahead before you've got an operative law. That's important. And what you have to do is design transitional provisions in your law, which is one of the most complicated parts of driving the law. So that's what you'd have to do. And the transitional provisions, we haven't provided anything on that because we have not had time to draft a law because we've been hurried up by a year.
So, Geoffrey, in relation to the advertising recommendations, you changed your view on that as well, I see.
Yes, we have.
But you've come up with a result which was staged and likely to be fairly slow, but then resolved eventually in a fairly absolute restriction on advertising except for any information that was on.
Yeah, it's based on the Loi Albin, which is the French approach to this, and it is not based on the smoke-free environments approach, because in smoking, no good can ever come of it. With alcohol, that's not true.
Why have you suggested a slow transition?
Because there are some very complicated questions that have to be encountered, and they're whole-of-government questions. For example, the amount of sponsorship that occurs and how you would finance it when it was taken away for the sporting clubs. Those are very big, difficult issues. They cannot be done in a big hurry. And so really that has to be a phased, gradual thing. Otherwise it's just not practicable.
Raising the price of alcohol by 10%, do you really think that would make a difference to our buying behaviour?
There's no question that the evidence in every country of the world suggests that price is one of the most efficient means of controlling alcohol consumption.
So, Geoffrey, should there be a minimum price for alcohol? That's something that the UK is focused on, if possible.
We have got quite a lot in our report about minimum price, and we think the minimum price is worthy of further investigation. The difficulty we've had is that we cannot get the relevant material from those who sell it. We have recommended that there be an explicit provision in the law requiring them to provide that information to the government so the government can assess whether a minimum price should be introduced and, if so, what it should be. It's not possible at the moment to compute what it should be, but it would be a price that controlled the price of a unit of alcohol. So it would be neutral as to product. There's been a lot of discussion in pricing about the Australian tax on alcopops, as they're known. We have not gone down that road. We have recommended the structure of the tax we presently have in New Zealand. It's a fairly pure tax in New Zealand, but it does favour the wine growers to some extent. We didn't think the wine growers were in a position to have that change altered, and so we didn't recommend it.
So, Geoffrey, you're a very experienced politician. In your heart of hearts, do you think this is really a realistic package for a national government?
In my heart of hearts, I know that liquor legislation is the hardest legislation to do because it is based on a conscience vote. The conscience vote is historical. Our first report that we produced on liquor said you should get rid of it. This is a social problem. It's not like abortion or capital punishment. It's of a different character from that. My own view is that for legislative progress to be made, what is required is the end of the conscience vote.
A related question on that. How many submissions were received against increasing controls on alcohol sale?
Against?
Well, there's lots of submissions that were received in favour of restricting alcohol consumption. Were there many people that were opposed to the change?
We've done a total analysis of our submissions. We had an outside organisation do it, and it's a public document, and you can secure it and look at it to see the analysis of our submissions. It is because we got so many submissions, we had to subject them to an extraordinary form of analysis, and it's not easy to summarise in that sense.
It wouldn't be fair to say then that it was mainly the alcohol industry that were opposed to the changes you recommended?
I have not, in the course of this project, wanted to demonise the alcohol industry. They are a legitimate legal business, and the defects in relation to these matters are the result of the law, and they are simply carrying out their operations. They cooperated with us in the course of our inquiries. They were very helpful to us, and I don't wish to conduct a campaign against them, and I've been as neutral as I can in assessing the evidence. No doubt that will cause a lot of trouble, but that was our job, and that's what we've done.
It seems there's a bit of a gap in raising the purchase age to 20, but those 20-year-olds can still supply it to their 18 and 19-year-old friends, flatmates, brothers, sisters, what have you. Is that really going to limit the effectiveness of it?
No, I don't think so, because they're not as vulnerable as the ones under 18. And neither is it practicable from a legal point of view for a person who doesn't require a legal guardian to place them under that sort of legal restriction.
Is there any idea of how much the new restrictions, if they were brought in, would cost the liquor industry or entertainment industry?
We haven't been able to assess that, and there will, when the government decides to introduce a piece of legislation, there will have to be a regulatory impact statement on that legislation. In discussions with the Minister of Justice, it was decided that the Ministry of Justice would prepare that and we would not. We did a regulatory impact statement on our first one, and that's still valid to some degree, but in essence the question is a cost-benefit analysis. And the economic analysis put in our report that we got from our Australian consultants make it very clear that the net benefits to the New Zealand economy of adopting our measures are very clear and very big.
So, Geoffrey, with the closing times, the nationwide closing time, just the Rugby World Cup Minister, Murray McKelly, speaking this morning, saying that if this was to come into force in time for the World Cup, he's got a piece of legislation that could override it anyway. I mean, that sort of attitude, the government already trying to get exemptions before something's even down, does that concern you?
No, because I don't believe, for the best will in the world, this legislation could be operative before the World Cup.
It's not a good sign for the government's view of this report.
I'm not commenting on the government.
So you don't think this can be ready in time for the World Cup?
I'm sure it can.
It'll take longer than 18 months?
Yes, to become operative, it would. You've got to first of all pass it. Then there's a large number of things you've got to do under it to make it operative. For example, we're recommending a risk-based licensing system. The regulations of that will take at least 6 months to prepare.
Are you still recommending repeal of the sale of liquor?
Absolutely.
Okay, so the Alcohol Harm Reduction Act.
Is a new act.
A single piece of legislation?
Yes, it's a new act, totally new.
Have you received any communication from the government on whether they're likely to change it from a conscience vote to a party vote?
I have not. It's not my business.
Is one of the issues with it being a conscience vote the fact that MPs can be lobbied directly by the industry?
I have written a 50-page report on this, which says the shambles that the law got into last time because of the conscience vote. Section 36, which led to very small businesses being able to sell wine and beer, is exactly an example of that, and indeed that is why it should be changed. I am not concerned with anything other than the legislative result which is fundamentally defective when a conscience vote is in operation. Because it's just impossible to judge what amendments will be carried or what will not at the committee stage.
So, Jeffrey, I was talking to a mother yesterday who has teenage children who felt that basically that they've been subjected to an experiment over the last few years of having teenagers and who's drinking regulations. Is that a fair, for her to feel that way?
I think there's been a large amount of public concern about this question that has been registered in our submissions and in our meetings, and I think that degree of public concern certainly surprised me.
Can I bet this minimum price thing, your concern that gives profits, I guess, back to the big retailers?
It does produce windfall profits for the industry. That's one of the biggest defects of a minimum price scheme. That's true.
You've seen this is not a return to a Wowser. What else what other recommendations would be returned to Wowser? I mean, it doesn't seem like there's much more that could be recommended.
I don't think you know much about the history of New Zealand legislation, if that's your position. Go back to 1893 when we had local option.
Prohibition is
a hopeless business.
And
there's nothing like... I mean, we're saying you can go out drinking till 4 a.m. You say that's wowsers?
Really? So that's what you consider to be wowsers and prohibition?
No, anything that is highly restrictive. But what we're saying is that there will be alcohol readily available under these arrangements. It's just going to have to be marketed a bit differently. Thank you very much.
Thank you.